Mr. Bell, Reel 5. We were talking about your time on HMS Bight to back on convoy duties. Just looking at a typical day. Now, if looking at a more typical day where you weren't making mending of things or recreations, what would your typical day's duties be? I mean, you'd have your ASDIC and your lookout periods, I presume.
Oh, yes. ASDICs, and of course, ASDICs were down into the shipyard. It was about 20 feet below the waterline. And yes, and you have to be careful about that, you know. And of course, you like living in the cabin, you know, and the cabin was completely soundproof. And it was lined all with wood lining, you know, it was completely soundproof. So you get on and concentrate on your work, you know.
Did you find it a bit claustrophobic down there?
No, I didn't actually, because there were two of them. There were two of them on watch at once, you see. Normally, I think you're on loan, you know, but on the Bighty, I had two, and that was very, very good. And we had, I should tell you that one of the lads that I used to partner with was a chap, he's a junior head lad called Taylor. And Ginger Taylor went to America with us, and he used to be a gravestone carver, you know, a monumental mason, you know. And he used to do all these awful things like, this is the body of George Bell, you know. He used to put the wind in it, he used to depress you. I said to him, you jack that in, you know, before it gets out of hand. You know, we don't want to know that side of life, you know. We're not concerned. He said, well, that's the trade, you know, George. I said, well, go back to us. Don't do it here. He did a deal with me one time, here lies the body of George Bell, you know, lost at sea and all this sort of thing. I didn't like it very much. I showed him off a strip about it. So that was one back. And Billy Humes was a bus conductor in Salford, in city life. He was another one that came there. Another lad was, I can't remember more now. I can remember those three.
They were your mates, they were your particular friends.
They were Aussie Greens. A team of eight, you see. A team of six. And one was an HSD, you know, higher submarine detector. He was a kilt, you know.
Now, what's that? Well, can you explain?
The next rank was in submarine detection. HSD, you had an SD, a submarine detector, HSD, and then an SDI, submarine detector instructor, you see. That was a three ranks, you know. But I never went forward. I liked what I was doing. I liked.
So you were just an SD?
Yes, that's right. Now, I stayed that way. I liked it that way. Yes, I did.
Well, why didn't you want promotion?
Well, I always thought that wartime was, the war would end one day, you know, and it was a temporary sort of appointment that we had it up. And that's why I didn't go for commission. Well, I went for commission, but it has on my papers, I failed the CW, you know.
I'll come on to that, yeah. Anything, before we go, because we're quite near there, anything else about the Bighter before you leave? You were on there for a year,
yes,
from May 42 right through to May 43.
Right.
And you were an acting AB, able seaman there. That was the AS rank, wasn't it? Anything else you remember of your time on the Bighter you want to tell us?
Well, the flying was very interesting for us, you know. We used to go up on the catwalk and watch the flyers come in and out, you know. And that was a very good pastime, you know, for us. I have some pictures of the Bighter, you know, and when we used to stand on the catwalks and watch them. And of course, we used to watch the planes being taken up on the lift, you know, taken on the flight deck. You were allowed to do certain things like that, you know.
Did you take the photographs you've got? Because I think
no. There was an official photographer on board, and you had to buy them from him. You know, he was only allowed to take what the Admiral said he could.
Now, how did you come to leave the Bighter?
I was recommended for commission, and I left for King Alfred, as you can see by the paper.
Now, could you tell a bit about how did you feel when you were recommended for commission?
Well, I felt. Well, Leake got me in, and Lieutenant Leake, he got me in my division officer. He got me in, and he said to me, you have OLQ, officer-like qualities. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And he said, well, I think you have. And he said, and I want to recommend you for an RMBR commission. And the next thing I knew, I was officially designated to leave the ship and to go to King Alfred's Gold. And I went there.
Now, that was a shore station, was it at an old swimming pool or something?
That's the training school, yes. That's King Alfred. It was by the cricket ground in Hove, the Sussex cricket ground.
And you went there in June 1943?
Yes, that's right. And I wasn't there very long.
No, it seems to just about 2 weeks. Now, what do you remember? How were you received? What was your reception like there?
Well, the reception by the other lads recommended for commission was very good. And it was strange for them to find a Geordie among them, as I would call a Geordie. I'm not a Geordie, of course, I'm from Durham. Then you know, there's a fine tune. You know that, don't you, as you go around. But I was a Geordie to them, you know. Everybody, you know, north of York was a Geordie. So that I was well received by them. But I didn't like being commissioner. I didn't like the idea of being commissioner, also, for some reason.
Why didn't you like it?
I don't know. I think it was the attitude of the senior officers that were there. You know, the boards.
In what way? What was their attitude
well,
like?
The first time I had the interview, the one of the senior officers in the middle of the table said to me, "What was your father?" I said, "He was a miner." Well, his brows went down like a curtain, you know. As much as say, what are we getting in here? A miner's son, you know. Well, I mean, my brother's going to be a clergyman. And I said, I immediately got my back up there. I said, a miner, it was something that crawled about in the bowels of the earth and all that. Of course, that was accurate, he did. But he was none the worse for that. And I was very proud of my heritage, you know, and I thought, well, my father gave his life up for me. What's he getting in the world about? And I got alongside of him for some reason. But he said to me, another question he asked me, he said, "What do you think of the Russians?" He said, well, of course, I haven't been to Russia by that time. But he said, "What do you think of the Russians?" And I said, "Well, I said, they must think that there's something worth fighting for. You know, they're doing very well." And they were communists, and he didn't like that at all, So I think I got him on the wrong side, that side. But I was being honest. I thought, well, here's the Russians, they're doing very, very well. We are their allies, you know. And I didn't like the sort of attitude of... So I probably didn't fit into being an officer at the first going like that.
Well, do you remember any of the training you actually did?
Yes, signals. This one was in charge, yeah, signals.
How did you do at that?
Well, you had flags, you know, semaphore. You had flags, and you were sent out to exercise in pairs and that sort of thing. And read the flags. I didn't do very well at that, I must admit. But I think that my attitude was all wrong at that time. I wasn't interested in being an officer. Really.
Any other parts of training, or did
and
you did?
And you have to be, you know, you have to be very, very keen to be an officer. And I could have made a good officer, I'm quite sure I could have. Really, between you and I, Peter, I could have made a good effort.
Do you remember anything else about the training other than the signals? Or?
Signals was the one that stuck in my mind. No, I can't really remember the rest of the training, Peter.
And how did it come to an end? It was only 2 weeks, but...
Yes, well, I was called in and said, well, you know, you failed, so we're sending you back into general service. You're not in your waiting.
Did they tell you why you'd failed? I mean...
No, they didn't tell me. And there was another lad that came out of on the lorry with me from Hove back to the barracks. And he was a university graduate. He had passed his university exams, you know. And he was a plumber's son from Glasgow. So I thought, what's on here, you know, some class distinction here, you know. But there wasn't any class distinction or officer that I knew later, but from Leek as well. But Leek was an RN officer. I got this feeling somehow that I wasn't cut out to be an officer somehow. So I was glad to get back in. And you know, I liked Asdis. I liked what I did.
Yeah.
That's what I did, I must admit.
So, what happened then? You seem to have gone back to Drake.
No, I went back to Osprey, didn't I?
Yeah, just 2 days at Drake, yeah, you're quite right. So, now, what happened when you got to Osprey again?
Osprey was the ASDIC base for reallocating it.
And what happened there?
Well, I was sent out to America again. I was sent to Boston this time. But I was sent to Seiko again, wasn't I?
Seiko, it says here, yeah. That's
right,
in.
I was sent to Seiko too, that's right.
That's August 1943.
That's right. And then I was sent to join the people building the dam at Boston.
Now, what do you remember about? You had about a month and a half at Seiko again. What do you remember? That would be at Asbury Park again, would
yes,
it?
Yes, that's right. That was back to where I started, yes.
And what do you remember of that period?
Oh, I can remember something particular about this period. I was sent to America the second time, and I was fortunate enough to be sent on the Queen Mary, the old Queen Mary, you know, that's now in America. And I went on the Queen Mary. I remember the cabin I was in was cabin 123. I remember C123 I was in, 13X of course, yeah. And the Queen Mary, you see the hierarchy were going across the Quebec Conference, and therefore the Queen Mary was in the Clyde, and she was taking a lot of RAF lads, you know, to do their training. And one day we were shepherded to one side of the ship, and we weren't allowed to the other side of the ship, we had to stay on that side. And there was a launch came, we could see the launch come towards the ship. And we were carefully policed to make sure we weren't watching, you see. And of course there were, Churchill was aboard, and we had a lot of celebrities aboard there. What was they called? Lord Wingate, the Chinook leader, was aboard. Admiral Sir Dudley Pound, the chief of the naval staff. Air Marshal Sir Charles Porter, he was on board. Guy Gibson, and Guy Gibson gave us a talk while we were travelling across the Atlantic. He gave us a talk about the raids, you know. And he was very, very good. He was excellent man. Never missed himself once. He was very, very good. And old Lord Wingate talked to us as well. Just think of the U-boats that got that ship, what they got, you know. But she was escorted very carefully by two cruisers. It was a county class cruiser and a city class cruiser. That was our escort, that's that one. And of course, she didn't need escort, really, the Queen Mary. She could do 38 knots. She was belting across the Atlantic. We were crossing 3 days to Halifax. We went to Halifax. And it was a thrill to see the mountains all lined up, you know. I'd never seen anything like this, you see. To a lad like me, this was a thrill. So anyway, we got to Halifax, and the captain of the Queen Mary was Sir Edgar Britton, the little fellow, you know. He had to stand on little boards to get his ship in, you know. He had to stand. He was only about 5 feet nothing. He used to stand on the wing of the bridge on a stand, you know. And he used to do this, you know. He put that ship in like back in a car. You know, he'd never been to Halifax before. He'd always run to New York. But anyway, he got us in there, and then I got aboard the train from when I disembarked in the Queen Mary. But I should say something about the Queen Mary. I was able to go inside the Queen Mary mast, you know, inside the mast. I thought that was very thrilling, you know. And it was all hot water pipes upside, inside, you know. It was luxury travelling that. But we got on board the Queen Mary anyway, and I made some friends with the RAF lads going over to the training there, you know. Being seasick, I remember one sailor being seasick, and he came and he said, "Come on," he said, "you're not the only one." He shoved the RAF out the lad and said, "We can do it as well, you know." And he was sick on the side. But the Queen Mary was a fantastic ship, and she plowed across that wind with about 38 knots, my God. We'd never seen anything like that at all, and she was tremendous, really, first cruise.
When you got to Halifax?
Halifax, yes. Well, when I got to Halifax, we were separated, we were herded into trains, and we didn't go back to Asbury Park. I was sent on by train across along to Boston.
So you did, because it says you were at Seiko again, but you weren't, you were at Boston.
Well, I was sent to Boston. I can't remember. Oh, yes. I went back to Seiko from the Queen Mary. Yes, I did. I was there for a short time. And we were back in New York, you know. It was lovely being in New York, you know, and it was wonderful, wonderful. It was like being on holiday. I remember going round Woolworths when I was walking around Woolworths, and there were some girls following us, you know, we were just young lads, 20 years say, we were ready to be there. And these girls were all following us and giggling. And I said to Billy Hems, we must get something done about this, Billy. And I said, come on, girls, I said, you know, stop following us, please, you know, leave us alone for a while. And this girl said, Indy, lovely, just keep talking, she said. She just liked hearing this talk, you see. And that took in my mind. And while I was in Sacred 2, I started teaching in Sacred 2.
Well, teaching
started,
what?
I started teaching. The Americans asked me to teach them bookkeeping. I'd done that in class in England. And I started teaching girls bookkeeping in accounts, you know, elementary accounts. That's what we do. And I found that they were miles behind us, you know, in the standards of bookkeeping. Yes, they were. It's surprising that, you know, I expected these girls, you know, they were about 17 years old, you know. I was only 20, 21 myself, and I expected them to be miles ahead of us, but they weren't, you know. They were the pupils and I was the teacher. That was where I actually started teaching, Peter. I learned how to teach there.
And, did you have any duties, official duties, while you were at Saker?
No, not really. No. You were just waiting. You were just heading into the herd of the land waiting.
Now, did you know about the destroyer escorts, the Buckleys and the, you know, the Ewarts? And the, did you know about what was happening?
No, I didn't actually, until I was assigned to them, you know. In fact, they weren't called Captain Class then, they were called DEs, destroyer escorts. They were built as Americans actually built them as destroyers, you know. But of course, they were lightly armed, so they weren't really a fleet destroyer. But they were escort destroyers, you see, that's what they called them. And I was assigned to a number, you know. And when I went to Boston, I was surprised to find that the kids were laid while I was there. They built six escort destroyers, destroyer escorts, in a dry dock. Six of them, you know, two here, two there, two behind, two here, so that two like that, two there, two there, two there, six of them. And then when the time came, you saw, of course, that they were to be launched, they just floated them out, you know. And that's the first time I've seen that. This was the prefabrication, you know. And whilst I saw the Dummer being built, it wasn't the Dummer then, but it was a number then. And while it was built, while it was being built, the lorries were coming in with the bits for the destroyer, you see, for the ship. For instance, the mast came in two lorries. The mast came in two lorries. One was the base of the mast, and the other was the aerial's end, you know. And they were welded, you know, welded whilst they were waiting there. Isn't that marvellous? And I watched them being done.
And where were you staying during this period at Boston? Were you in the Fargo building? It's a big...
I can't remember.
You don't remember where you were staying, though?
No, I don't remember.
And what were you doing while they were building the Donet?
Well, we were assigned to various duties, you know. Looking at the HSD, looked after the ASDIC, you know, to see if it was fitted properly and all that, you know. And the radar rating, the chief radar rating was looking after his. So we all had to look after certain bits of piece to see if it was properly assembled by the jockeys, you know, to our satisfaction. And, busy. But, you know, it was built in 52 days, Peter. No, sorry, it wasn't. It was built very quickly, though. I'm getting that mixed up with the time that they're working at trials. Anyway, it was very quickly assembled, and the six were lost at once, you know, outside. So you had a flotilla, hadn't you? You had a flotilla of six, you know, in front of your very eyes. And we thought, well, my goodness, I've been used to a naval ship like the Viper. I'm not going to enjoy this at all.
Do you remember the launching ceremony? because they used to have a launching ceremony. Do you remember that at all? When did you move aboard?
Oh, shortly before she was launched, I think. And I can't remember the launching ceremony. I don't remember the launching ceremony. I actually beat me off that week. I don't know. On some of the duty or something. But,
and so you were living on board ship for a while in harbour while they were.
Yes. Yes. I can't remember this one. My memory failed me. I can't remember how that happened. I remember when I was going to digress a bit there. When I was going to the Ramat, when I was going to the DE, if you call it, and I was one of a certain party, you know, going up there, all row recruits, you know, going to these new ships, and they said, who's in charge? This Yankee fella come aboard, he was a guard, you know, of the border. And when we crossed over the border of Albany, from America to Canada, it was Albany, the border anyway, I remember that. And as we went over the border, this Yankee came aboard and said, who's in charge here? And I said, well, I had the papers, so I said, I am. He said, I showed him my picture, and he said, oh yes, it could be you, he said. And then he said, Limey, he said, well, you deserve this, being sent to Boston. And I said, why should I not be sent to Boston? He said, well, the British are not welcome here, are they? He said, have you noticed the colour of the water? He was meaning the Tea Party, you know. He's been facetious in the Tea Party. Me being Royal Recruit, like, you know, I looked down the water. You know.
Well, you weren't a Royal Recruit then, were you? You'd been in for 2 years.
You're still Royal. I mean, I'm a newcomer, really, the Navy, even after that time, you know. You're still looked upon as a, not a rookie, but, you know, you thought you knew it all then. Never mind.
Now, what were your first impressions of the Domat when you went on board?
Well, the first time I saw the Domat, it was being built, of course. And I thought, when I went aboard, I was particularly in the Adric set, you know, in the Adric compartment. And I was surprised to find that the Adric compartment was right up on top of the bridge. It was next to the captain, you know, on top of the bridge. And it was the full length of the bridge, you know, and there was a seat there for you, and your equipment was all there, recording equipment, your training apparatus and whatnot, you know, it was all there for you. And it was like, and had a porthole on this part of the bridge, on the, porthole where the bridge, you know, is separated a little bit, and the porthole in that side, completely. And you could, at least when you were on watch on the bridge, you know, if you had a minute, you could look through that portal, you know. But we didn't use it much time.
Was the equipment the same as you were used to?
Yes, it was. I think it was British equipment. I think equipment that was put into there, the 126 set, yes. I think that, like, it destroys equipment, you know, British destroys equipment. So although it was an American-built destroyer, it had the British Arctic equipment because it was superior to theirs, you know. It was superior.
Now, what about the working up?
Now then, we sailed from Boston and we went to Bermuda, St. George's Bay, Bermuda. And the working up trials were done there. In other words, the working up trials were always to get a ship, lifting the ship, you know. It's absolute hell.
What do you remember of it?
I do remember it. An Aztec officer from Bermuda came aboard and really put us through it, you know. The bell would ring for action station at 3 o'clock in the morning. You had to get out there and get out to action station, you know, and so forth. So they put you through hell, but that was the idea. Put you through hell to make you efficient, you know. To make you toe the line quickly, you know. To make a good crew of you.
And were you doing these training things with submarines, British submarines, or were you just doing it? What sort of training exercise did it put you through?
Pretty similar to Nimrod. Pretty similar to Nimrod, really.
So with the submarine?
Yes. The submarines were there. American submarines, usually. And they used to be off on rest duty, and they did that, you know. They did that. So that... I can't remember this strange idea.
Okay.
But I remember the thing was they put us through the hoop, you know, in the mids, and they analysed it very carefully. The attack was successful or not, you know, and very similar to Nimrod, our thing, actually. So that, and we completed that in about, let's see.
It was about September 43. Did it. What did you think of the ship then? Because it was very different from a British destroyer. Can you just talk about the ship generally?
I like the ship. I like the design of the ship. And I'll tell you what I thought of it. It was a destroyer. It was a miniature destroyer, It was an escort destroyer. It was a destroyer that was fitted for escort duties. That's how I looked at it. And I think I was accurate in assuming that, you know, because she was... incidentally, we had bunks on board there as well. Three-tiered bunks, you know, as the Americans put their ships that way. Three-tiered bunks. I was in the middle one. And the cook was in the bottom one. The cook, my mate Tommy Simpson from Edinburgh, was in the bottom one. Because he was a cookie, had to go fasten in night, you know, and get your breakfast in the morning. So I was in the next one. And I used to get up in the middle of the night, of course, as well, and do one half and three half, you know. But,
what about the other American fittings? They're supposed to have had water fountains and a laundry and things like that. What do you recall of that?
Yes.
I mean, they're all taken out when they,
yes, they were.
But what did you think of the water fountains and?
Well, it was no cup of tea, was it, Peter? It was no cup of tea, you know. The bike had the same, you know. She had a soda water fountain, you know, fitted in the bike. And when we got to England, the skipper said straight away, that comes out. There's ammunition officers going into there, you know. The same with the donut, of course. And so I looked upon the Donald as a miniature destroyer, and I thought she performed as a miniature destroyer.
What about the things like the through deck and things like that? Were you aware that that was a new thing?
Through deck? You walked right from after forward to aft. Yes, you did, right the way along. Once you left the mess deck, you go on to top deck. And you walk right away along towards the depth charge racks, that's right. Oh, they were all right, they were okay.
And it was, it was sort of welded rather than riveted. And that's
yes, and it performed very well, the welding. The welding never split in my time there, never split. But when we were doing working up trials, Peter, we actually accidentally, our moorings came adrift. And we drifted down the line of ships, and we hit the cook, our sister ship, the cook. We hit her, aft, we hit her back end. And we ripped her open. Our willing gave way. Ours didn't, but theirs did. And our skipper signaled over to the skipper of the cook. He signaled over, "Darling, your slip is showing. All the lads watching was outside, you see. You see? It's, I think it's in that book. But, darling, your slip is showing." The lads, but she was hanging out. Yeah.
Whose fault was it that she'd gone adrift? That you'd gone adrift?
We dragged our anchor. It was just one of those things.
Peter. Was that in the storm? Well, there were some storms, but I'm not sure whether it was a bit earlier than that. Do you recall any storms there?
I don't think it was particularly bad, but we dragged our anchor anyway, which happens at the best of times. And we drifted down towards the cook, of course, before the cook could get out the way we hit her, you see. But it wasn't a bad accident. It wasn't a very bad. The shoe was repaired in no time, you know, as well as that was it.
Did you do any of the special exercises like abandoned ship? Some of the ships did abandoned ship and a couple of other things.
Yes, I put us through all the drills, you know, when we were there. That's working up trials, that's part of working up trials. That they put you through it, you know. The radar, he's got the dose, we got our dose, the gunner's got their dose, the depth charge rack got their dose as well, you know. And the seamen got their dose, very, very exceptional.